Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Gather round. Let's have a lovely episode of the National Treasures podcast. When? Now? With who? Me, Will Duggan, and you?
Laura Lex.
Welcome. You join us on the fourth of our episodes regarding Cheddar Gorge, where we were sent by the wonderful Richard Herring. In the first episode, Laura and I went to Cheddar Gorge. What a great time we had. In the second episode, we chatted to Richard Herring about Cheddar Gorge. What a great time we had. Then, last week, you heard me talk all about gimmicky, weird tourist attractions based off that terrible cave that was just insane. And this week, we bring it all to a head because Laura is going to tell me all about the second thing that you guys voted for. It's animals in the Victorian times. I'm excited. Are you excited? Pause for yes.
Always.
And then also you. And then also you can be excited as well, Laura.
Yay! Yeah. How exciting. And basically, Victorian era animals came up because of the donkey that was professed to be loved but got worked to death. So hard to tell how loved a thing was.
I loved it as I saw it crumble and fall.
Yeah, you know, it's how a lot of us feel about our marriage, isn't it? I love them, but I am breaking them down slowly day by day.
And then when they die, you win.
But it'll kill me. Anyway, so yeah, obviously animals, the problem that I had with doing the research here is that animals were not invented by the Victorian period.
Ah, just like the wheel, early 20th century.
Short episode. Thanks for coming. See you later. It doesn't really work that because you've all seen the timestamp on the episode. Anyway, no. So there's a lot going on. I hope I found some good stuff. There was no obvious way to do the order of how this information, like, it's really messed with my desire for organization here, but let's give it a go. So, first up, noticeably, it seems like pets start to become more and more a thing in the Victorian era.
Okay.
Like, slight theory, maybe, that it's because of industrial revolutionizing.
Mm-hmm.
So people are coming in off the land and moving to the cities. And so they're missing their little animals that they were in contact with a lot. So they start, like, gathering animals into the home a bit more.
Yeah, I suppose. I never really considered that sort of, like, in the countryside, farmers wouldn't necessarily have, like, pets so much as like, you've been to a farm these days, you're like the sheepdog. They like the sheepdog, but it is staff, not just like living a great life of luxury. It's got shit to do.
Yeah. It's very different. The thing with a lot of this research that's, I always think when you're talking about the past, is it's hard to know who we're talking about. You know, when they go like, people were doing this, and you kind of think like, which people though? Like, how... Are you talking about any of the poor people here, basically?
Yeah, I tell
you. Because, you know, I'm fairly sure if somebody wrote down what life's like now for people, it wouldn't really reflect my life very much.
I remember once being at, like, a Chinese buffet with my parents as a child and saying, I wish I was Chinese to eat this every day. But I was like, first of all, that no one eats this in China. And secondly, if they did, it isn't just the guys. It's the the emperors.
Yeah. So that's first thing. So pets. I assume, let's just assume we're talking about the rich people. Ugh, that's who they write stuff down about, isn't it? Okay, so breeding stuff gets start and... oh my God, my words. So just for clarity, I've overslept and woken up approximately 4 minutes before the recording. So I'm sorry that my mouth is just garbage. More garbage than usual. Breeding things gets more and more defined. So because dogs and stuff have come indoors and people are just sitting them on their lap and want them to be a specific type of thing, they're breeding more and more specific types of dogs to get them to be docile and stuff.
Okay, got you.
So do you want to guess the two most popular breeds with fashionable women?
Is it Dachshunds?
It's not, no. Good guess, though.
Miniature poodles?
No, I'm sorry, you've not guessed them. It's pugs and Pomeranians.
Okay. Do you know, I think I was reasoning quite recently. And I think, like, some of the kennel clubs, like, maybe not Crufts, but sort of like their competitors, want to get pugs sort of, like, declassified. Because life is hell for a pug, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think it can be. And I think now that there is a, what do you call it, like a... a surgery that you can have on a pug that clears their airways a bit, but it's just like, oh, come on, guys. Yeah. But this is where the danger started, really. So it's these guys. That terror that pugs feel now every time they have to breathe in. That was the Victorians. Thank you, posh people of the Victorian times. They were way more into dogs than cats, roughly speaking, Victorians.
Sure.
And there's a good quote that I found in Cassell's Household Guide from 1897 that says, "A fickle or ungrateful disposition is neither lovely nor lovable. And as most cats are fickle, ungrateful and selfish, they are not often favourites."
That's fair. That's fair. Do you know, I think one of the biggest lies that I was told as a child was from the cartoon Tom and Jerry, and it was cat hunts mouse, dog hunts cat. And I think most of the time, if we're honest, most dogs are terrified of most cats.
Yeah, my dog loves cats. She would play with every cat she found, but because she's so used to the cats, like, she grew up with cats as a puppy, and then my brother had a cat, so she spent a lot of time around cats. And now when we're out, she like, "Oh, it's a cat," and then the cat is like, like back arch, spitting hair everywhere.
Was it your dog when she was very, very small, like acted like a cat, like used to stalk things like a cat?
Yeah.
That is funny.
She still does that a little bit, and I can never work out what it is she's up to. So, like, you know, my house has got those steps up to it.
Yeah.
Has she ever pounced on you when you've come up the steps? Like, she crouches on one of the steps really still. And you can say at the gate, you can say, "Hi, Mackie," and she'll just sit there. And then you take two steps up the step, and she just sits there, like, quivering a little bit. But if you get to a certain step, then she bounds down towards you. And she's like, I don't know if she thinks she's hidden. She's in no way hidden.
Yeah, she's just lying on the step.
Yeah.
She's with her head low.
But sort of does leave her butt stuck up in the air.
I can't say I've ever experienced that, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Well, that's one of our favourite things. So that's the beginnings of pets, basically, in the Victorian era. Also, there's obviously there's a lot of change in the way English British people see animals, because the British Empire is expanding at such a rate. And obviously, everybody's over there nicking the animals that they find.
Sure.
So there's lots more animals suddenly existing that the average person had never heard of before. So the more exotic ones you can bring back and have as a pet, the higher your status symbol kind of thing.
Yes, and that brings us back to something that I mentioned pretty much every episode in series 1 and 2. Peacocks!
Well, I had a look at peacocks, actually, because I was like, yeah, I bet that was a thing. Peacocks arrived way early. I didn't write it down because it wasn't Victorian era, but hang on, let me get back up again. Because have a guess as to when peacocks arrived in the UK.
Well, I'm going to guess it's around the 1700s.
No.
Because they're from India, aren't they, peacocks?
I think so.
So sort of like when we're sort of first getting involved in India, isn't it? Like, so maybe the 17th century?
No, I don't think so. So the earliest example of it referred to in writing comes from 1300.
Oh, wow.
And in the 14th century, Chaucer first used the word to describe ostentatious people who strutted about.
So they've been there long enough for them to sort of enter the lexicon almost.
Yeah, I think it's really early. Like, it says that they might have been in Europe, introduced by Alexander the Great, possibly.
Right.
So there's a chance that they were, like, in Greece and other areas of Europe by 450 BCE.
Wow, that is a lot sooner than I thought.
Yeah, I had exactly the same thought process as you, though. I was like, all right, peacocks, let's go. That feels like something a Victorian nicked, but that was way earlier.
Well, I mean, irrelevant to the topic, but really good. That's my favourite bit thus far. And I love the thing about cats and dogs.
So, back to pets a little bit, first of all. Queen Victoria, obviously, she's the big trendsetter of the day. She had a lot of pets. She liked dogs. She, confusingly, no one told her about royals being iconic. She had a King Charles Spaniel.
Right, okay.
So that's annoying, actually, because can you not? And she, he was called Dash, I think. And she had a Pomeranian as well called Turi. And she wrote about them in journals. So Queen Victoria was quite a diary keeper.
Okay.
So she like wrote about them a lot. And it seems like she was quite into dogs. You know, like the way Lizzie too was very horse mad. And that was everybody's like, oh, she loves horses.
And corgis.
Yeah. She seems to have been well up on dogs.
Well up on dogs.
It says, so there's a diary entry of her 23rd birthday when clearly they've hit a point now where Prince Albert doesn't really know what to get her anymore.
Okay.
Probably went overboard on year one, you know, when you're first
when together. You're wooing, you're trying to make them think you're a better person than you are.
Bought her everything he knows she wants. So for her 23rd birthday, he just buys her 8 dogs.
Oh God, like it's like somebody said to him, "Hey, Prince Albert, I've written this song. It's called The 12 Days of Christmas," and he sort of like paid half attention to it. And at the end, like, "Yeah, that is sehr gut. For Vicky, that is 800. Yeah, 800."
Yeah. Can you imagine just rocking up on someone's birthday with 8 dogs for them without checking? That's what's mad about being royal, is that that's fine. That's not going to upset her. Like, that would ruin the rest of my life if I was bought 8 dogs right now. But she's just got enough staff to go, wonderful, thank you, darling. And that's someone else's problem. Like, some poor servant had their job trashed that day.
I really hope that, like, he's like, I've got you a present. And then it's just a dog. He goes, I've got you another present, and it's another. And by the fifth time, she's like, can I guess? Because I've got a reasonable idea at what's coming on here. Vicky, what is this? Number 6. Is it a dog, Albert? Yeah, it's a dog for you.
So there's a entry from her diary of her 8 dogs. She was thrilled with all of them. She loves 8 dogs. A beautiful white Spitz, which I had seen before and greatly admired. A couple of beautiful white truffle dogs, very rare, something like poodles as to hair, but much smaller. A couple of beautiful little Blenheim spaniels and a clever, very small little pug. A most rare dark blue, as it's called, Scotch terrier. And a very pretty little King Charles. I was quite delighted.
Well, there you go. I hope you enjoy it, Victoria.
Yeah, she's loving her birthday party.
There's no way that Buckingham Palace didn't stink of dog shit in the Victorian time.
Was Bucky Pal a thing by then?
I think she's the one. Lived by this I think Victoria's the one that made it the official residence.
Gotcha. Well, you're so smart. Yeah, stanky. Luckily, there's that park right next door, so plenty of places to walk them, but
yeah.
Ugh, yeah, 8 dogs. So, dogs are big. So big, in fact, that dog shows start to happen in the Victorian period.
Okay.
So all that kennel club stuff you were talking about, that is starting to exist and stuff now. So the first modern dog show happened in Newcastle. That's a good bit of trivia, that, isn't it?
Yep.
1859. And it was basically, it wasn't its own standalone thing. They were already having a cattle show. And then they sort of showed some working dogs in a dog show alongside it.
Like One Man and His Dog.
I don't know what that is.
It was a TV show in the, I think, 1970s. But of like shepherds showing off their skills.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think they were already looking at cows and then they've added dogs on as a sort of secondary bit. So that was the first dog show.
Would you like to know something that I think is true about Queen Victoria and Newcastle?
Yeah.
I think I'm reasonably sure that she hated Newcastle.
Oh, wow.
And she, don't know, she refused to make it a city. And then whenever she got on like the train or a carriage through Newcastle, she shut her curtains.
All right. There's a really pretty view, though, as you go through Newcastle on the train.
On that bridge, though. Was that bridge built?
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe someone built the bridge to try and impress her and get her to change her mind.
Well, she's dead now, and Newcastle isn't, so who wins?
Woohoo! Well done, Newcastle. You outlived a woman. So, there was not long after the Newcastle show, there was a dog show in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
Same year, in fact, that was showed non-sporting breeds too. So perhaps that could be thought of as being the first, like, dog show as we kind of know.
Dogs for dog's sake.
Yeah. So that was the Birmingham Dog Show. And then the next year, they ran the first national dog show. And there were 267 entries, 30 breeds and 42 classes for the judging.
Wow. They've really gone from no dog show to get that ruled ratified.
Yeah. So dogs are a big deal. Dogs are the pets that everybody loves. But if you've got a lot of money, oh boy, as I hinted at earlier, you could have more exotic pets.
Yes,
Will.
You could, yes.
If you could have an exotic pet, what would you have?
Well, I think if I could guarantee my safety, I'd like something like a lynx or an ocelot.
Ooh. Yeah, all right.
But I wouldn't, I think, I must stress, I would never have one of those animals because they're wild and they shouldn't be kept. But, you know, if there was a way to find a parity between it and I, that everyone was happy, that'd be quite cool.
Yeah. I mean, you keep Becca and she's wild. So.
She is wild. But do I keep her or am I kept by her?
Oh, that's a good question. So exotic pets were cool because they were a status symbol. So if you had one, everybody knew how expensive they were to look after. You needed a lot of grounds and stuff. So they were cool. So here's some examples of people that had exotic animals. You know Lord Byron?
Mm-hmm.
Heard of Byron?
He had a bear.
Yeah, he did. So I've got an extract from his diary. He's writing to his friend Elizabeth, and he's at college in Cambridge. And he says, I've got a new friend, the finest in the world, a tame bear. And he took it with him to college.
When I applied to go to Cambridge University, unsuccessfully, they took us on a little tour. And one of the tours was the room that the bear lived in.
Yeah. Well, he had it at the stables where the horses were kept, but I don't think it went well. So eventually he had it sent back to his family estate.
Yeah.
You know, when your pets are just too much to have at college with you, so you send them back.
Dear mummy, the bear is quite the ragamuffin. Awfully possible. Back at yours. Kind regards, LB. Lord Byron.
So, there's a bear. The Queen's son, Prince Alfred, he had a pet. What do you think he had?
Crocodile.
No. He had an Indian elephant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's not a happy story. He brought it home by a boat, and then they did manage to get it to England. He called it Prince Tommy.
Okay.
the elephant.
Sure.
But then they put him on a train from Plymouth, I'm guessing up to London, if they lived there.
Yeah.
And he the elephant panicked on the train and crushed his keeper to death.
Oof. Well, bloody hell, Prince Tommy.
Yeah. So he was at Sandringham for a little while, but then...
In the army? They...
Yeah, he was a lance corporal. No, he was in the, what are they called? The gun spear people.
The gun spear people?
Bayonets.
Bayonets.
You could use a trunk as a bayonet if you were an elephant.
The gun spear people. If I think that this, the last 30 seconds has really been the National Treasures podcast distilled to its most pure point. Something quite interesting, quite unknown. We've given some knowledge there, the kind of thing that Jenna would do. But then
Jenna. We
fucked it by saying Gunspear. Also, and well done for neither of us realising, we've mistaken Sandringham with Sandhurst.
Oh, yeah. This is why he won't let us go on. You're dead to me, isn't it?
I can't argue it. Can't argue it.
It's all we want in the whole wide world. Anyway, so he sodded himself up at Sandringham, but then they gave him away. They gave him to Dublin Zoo.
Sure.
And if you go to Dublin Zoological Museum, the skeleton of Prince Tommy is still there.
That's really cool. That's great. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. A fairly popular fancy animal to have. I don't think you'd guess this if I gave you 100 options to guess, Will. Do you remember a band a little while ago who I think had a song that went, I'm moving to New York?
The Wombats?
Yeah, wombats were a very popular pet.
Cube-shaped poop wombats.
Yeah. Why are you just sitting there with your eyes closed, please?
Because I've got the changing of the seasons plays havoc with my eczema, and the place of my body that gets it the worst is my eyelids. So my eyelids are on absolute fire. So I'm just shutting them so that the eyes start cleaning. I was hoping you wouldn't notice.
You didn't think I'd notice. Well, you're just sitting there.
Because, yeah.
Like you're meditating.
Yeah, so
I'm loving it because it means you're focused.
Yeah, my eyes...
I think we should do every single episode like
this.
Yeah,
my eyes are shut because my eyes are in so much pain. Also, I didn't sleep well. I've got to do, as I mentioned, off record, I think, I've got to do an 8-hour drive today that I'm going to get home far too late to fall asleep and have enough sleep what time I need to get up tomorrow. So I'm just trying to do anything I can to salve the body.
Oh.
Yeah.
If you feel sorry for Will and want to support him in a slightly patronising way, join the Patreon, yep. patreon.com/nationaltreasures.
A slightly patronising way.
Hey! Well, that's where the word comes from. So, wombat. Wombats were popular pets. Now, this is tied up with the opening of a zoo in Regent's Park. So the beginnings of London Zoo basically start around now. They opened a wombat lair.
Lair.
And so that sort of started the trend for wombats being popular, it seems like. So yeah, wombats became a slight popular thing.
You know, Becca and I, one of our points of friction in our relationship is she never says five words when a million will do. And I had to just put up with you there doing it. Wombats were very popular in the Victorian era. End sentence, end point.
So that brings us on to the sort of development of zoos a little bit. Zoos start to become a tiny, weeny, itty-bitty thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite as nice as we know them. We're talking pretty horrible, I think. But in many ways, they were attempting to be a step up from what came before. So prior to London Zoo, I think, and I didn't do much research into this, but I think there were like animals kept at the Tower.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. If you've been to the Tower of London, the queue you go in to get in, you have to go past. Edward III kept lions at the Tower, and they've got like excavated of the skeletons.
Yeah. So they have gone from there by now, and I think a lot of where they went, they got moved out to zoos and things like that. So London Zoo starts opens in April 1828, and they have some cool animals. They've got oryx. They've
What's
got.
An oryx?
I think it's like. It's like a deer, I think, an oryx, okay. Isn't it? It's a sort of African, much cooler version of a deer. You know, like a springbok, that sort of region sure. of animal, I believe. They've got orangutans, and they had some stuff that's extinct now. So, like I say, they weren't exactly, they're like preservations of species that we now know them to be. So it was opened just before the Victorian period, but it became open to the public in 1847, which I think was the Victorian.
Yeah, it's the 30s, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's late 30s to 1901 when she died.
Yeah.
So it becomes open to the public.
37?
Something like that. So the first hippopotamus to be found in Europe, I think, was at London Zoo.
Okay.
Do you want to know how it was described in the Times? It's a baffling description.
Okay,
you've got to wonder if they saw it.
Let me, in my
it's
head...
It's only three words. It's only three words.
Okay, but let me, in my head, and listeners, I ask you to join me, imagine a hippopotamus, an animal that maybe not all of us have seen recently, but we know what they look like. Imagine it. Go.
Gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
Newborn
Boo.
Rabbit.
Do you know what? 33% of those words are spot on.
Like
the other 66 are thick.
I've seen a newborn rabbit, and I suppose it is sort of hairless. I think they're called kits, newborn rabbits. So I guess there is a sort of element to that. And they, I suppose they've got the, like, I'm going to show you a picture of a newborn rabbit now, and we'll put this on the Patreon. I guess there's something there.
Oh my God, I take it back. That is a tiny hippopotamus.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I feel thick. I used to feel clever and now I feel thick.
Hey, welcome to my whole life. Yeah, I mean, it feels like a weird description when you see it written down, but then when you look at a newborn rabbit, you're like, inflate that, that's a hippo.
Yeah, you're right, that's 100% a hippo, my God.
I
apologise to the Times of London for my attitude about 10 minutes ago.
So we've got a few zoos popping up. There's also travelling menageries are a thing. Not
great
quite
word,
circuses.
Menagerie.
Yeah. Not quite circuses, but just, hey, come and have a look at these sad animals that we've got in tiny cages. So they'd have things like hyenas, lions, elephants, tigers, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The queen is known to have seen one. So the most famous one at the time was called Wombwells. And it came to Windsor Castle at some point, and the queen saw it, and she wrote in her journal that she saw a very accomplished elephant and a lioness with two very dear little cubs.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so she liked those. Now, here's what you really want when you're talking about Victorian animals, though. How did things go wrong?
Well, I imagine that the welfare of the animals wasn't very paramount. I think the understanding of the animals was minimal. I think the safety sort of procedures were shocking. So I imagine more regularly than not, some poor fucker got eaten.
Well, yes. Ding, ding, ding. 50 points for you. So there were a lot of incidents of people getting hurt. The one that sort of got a lot of attention was that female lion tamers, who were called the Lion Queens, when they got attacked, it made headlines for like, well, why were women doing that in the first place? Stop women doing everything. That kind of thing. So there was, in 1850, George Wombwell, who owns that menagerie that we were just talking about, his niece was attacked and killed by a tiger in front of the spectators.
Yeah.
And then after that, the jury were like, listen, women can't fight tigers. Men can, obviously, but I don't think women should be in the cages with them.
Now, that is something that I think is quite often ignored when it comes to equality. The good stuff that it managed, that the patriarchy has got you. No more getting mauled by tigers.
Yeah, but if men are allowed to get mauled if that's what they want, then women should be able to too.
No, I mean, listen to me. It's a bad thing that anyone's getting mauled by tigers. It's good that the women aren't. It's bad the men are. But I think the rule should be nobody get mauled by tigers. Hey, is that a tiger? Stay away from it.
Yeah, okay. So, I think if you want to die by tiger, that's your right.
I don't think it is, because often the poor tiger is the one that will really suffer.
Well, yes. So that moves on to where we're going next, which is basically, so the Lord Chamberlain banned women from performing. Men were allowed to for ages afterwards. But what was never brought into consideration, it was always like, these animals are wild. This is just what they do. They never considered that actually these animals were in horrific conditions for themselves. But we are kind of looking at the beginnings of animal niceness a little bit. So, in 1859, people ask, Origin of the Species comes out.
Yes, Darwin.
Yeah, which is a little bit of a game changer, really, in terms of how the world understands animals. Because prior to that, I don't think there was a lot of consideration in the average person about the fact that animals and humans share anything. They're totally different. Yeah. Whereas that comes out and a little bit more is understood. And so the beginnings of animal welfare crop up. But we're talking very small.
Sure, sure. I mean, the welfare is in, I don't think this tiger likes being set on fire. Is better than setting fire to a tiger.
Yeah. So we've got things like a big step forward was 1822. So a little bit before the Victorian period, but I've basically done this as 19th century animals. I hope that that's okay. So we've got the MP for Galway, whose name is Richard Martin. Mm-hmm. He brings a bill forward called the Ill Treatment of Cattle Bill.
Okay.
And that comes in 1822, and it does pass with quite a lot of arguing. Shocker. But it sort of, there had to be some rules now on how you treated cattle. A little tiny bit. You had to be a bit nicer to them. And he did push for more. His nickname was Humanity Dick. Trying to be nice. So they were trying to do things like, oh, hey, don't have that one horse pulling 19 cartloads. But there were lots of questions like, well, how could we possibly know what's too much for a horse to pull? We can't ask him, so let's not think about it.
Do you know a mad thing about horses? You know, like horsepower that they do cars?
Yeah.
One horse provides about 20 horsepower.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the single unit then?
No idea. No idea.
Huh. That's fun. Yeah, also, so like while they're doing this and kind of going like, you've got to be a bit nicer to cattle animals and hey, have a horse only pull one carriage with a maximum of 5 people in it, 9 children, that kind of thing. There's like horrific stuff happening with like pit ponies and things like that where they are just born, put in a mine, worked until they die.
Yeah.
So but we do start to see the outlawing of a bit more stuff as well. So I think bull baiting and cockfighting, they are ended in 1835.
That's cool. There's a really good pub in London, in the city. I think it's called The Cockpit, but it's like the pub was built for cockfighting. So you go in And it's a tiny little area. Then you've got to go upstairs immediately into like the viewing gallery. It's a really good, really good pub. It's in my book, London's Best Pubs. But by the time that I found it, it would take too long. I'd essentially give that information.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Well, that pub must have been built pre-1835, unless they were just doing it illegally, which seems quite right.
No, it's a well-old pub, well old.
Yeah, so it was also intended to protect dogs and bears, because there was some really horrible stuff. I'm not going to go into details, because this is a nice, light, cheerful, semi-factual podcast. There's no point in putting the horrors in there. But basically, awareness is starting to shift. And so the Society for the Protection of Animals has existed for quite a while. But then in 1840, Queen Victoria gives it her seal of approval. So from 1840 onwards, it becomes what we know it as, which is the RSPCA, the Royal Society for the Protection of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
It's always blown my mind that the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals and the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, the RSPB, but it's the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Will.
I think about that, genuinely, once or twice a week.
That's never occurred to me. Well, it does make sense, though, doesn't it? Because that's the sort of... Anyway, let's not get riled up about whether or not we should be a republic. We do that enough on our own time. So there you go. That's where we're going to leave the main flavour, listeners. Listeners who are not on the Patreon, there you go. We're leaving you there with some cheerful news. For those that are Patreon subscribers, we're going to look at 6 weird Victorian pets the jingle.
And if you are sad that you are not going to hear the 6 facts, you can join the Patreon. And we would recommend you do. Patreon.com/National Treasures to get the extras. A weekly extra podcast called Years and Years, where Laura and I do a deep dive, and a monthly live stream, which I must say yesterday was my favourite ever live stream.
It was fun, wasn't it? We did a quiz back through all, well, I've finished a quiz that we started a few months ago, back down through all the episodes we've done before and see how much Will could remember. And it was basically nothing.
But thank you. And of course, if you are unable to join the Patreon, that's absolutely fine. This podcast will always be free to enjoy. If you do have what equates as £1 a week, wing it our way for all the extra lovely content.
Boo-boo! Thank you so much. Join us again next week when we will be at Woolerton Hall.
Yeah, I found out something.
I really panicked then that wasn't what it was called. I was like, I'm just going to look Will in the eye and say it and see if he corrects me.
I found out something mad about Woolerton Hall that we didn't find out on our day there.
Yeah.
That blew my mind. So I'm going to give us a little sneak peek. Do you mind, Laura?
No, go for it, William.
There's one of the rooms in Woolerton Hall that we found out was a bedroom in the Batman film, The Dark Knight Rises. But what we didn't find out at Woolerton Hall, the hall is Wayne Manor in those 3 films. All the exterior shots of Batman's house in Batman Begins, The Dark Knight Rises, is Woolerton Hall.
Wow.
Anyway, bye.
See you next week for more facts like that that we didn't find out while we were there.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.